Life was good in those days, you know. We had everything, and we had wonderful food and lots of music. And my parents would go out at night. They were very glamorous. I remember them in evening wear, and they would come and kiss me goodnight. And they smelled so good. And I still remember my daddy, who was tall and very dark, and he had a big laugh, and he had a big silk scarf around his neck, which I still have. That's the only thing I have of him. And he would throw his head back and laugh. He was a happy, happy man. And around this time, they decided that perhaps they should let me know a little bit about my Jewish heritage. So they sent me to a kindergarten, a Jewish kindergarten, 2 days a week. Ishtvanka went there too. And we sang little songs, and they told us some stories. It didn't make much of an impression on me because, you know, religion was not part of our life very much. It was fun, and I remember there were 52 children in this kindergarten, and there's only two who were alive after that war. Eventually, I met the other person years and years later. And then things started changing, you know. My golden childhood started becoming different. People would stop talking when I came into a room. My mother had red eyes from crying. There were whispers going on. You know, people always talk about the Holocaust. They think, well, it suddenly happened. It didn't. It was in small increments. Small rights were taken away from you. First, the Jews couldn't go to university. Then they couldn't go to high school. Then the kids could only go to Jewish school. Jewish doctors weren't allowed to treat non-Jews. Jews were not allowed to employ any female under the age of 45. So a lot of the people that my mother and father had employed had gone. They were not there. And there was an unease. You know, children feel these things. And there was a sort of doom and gloom around. And my parents weren't laughing anymore. And then Fräulein, who used to read horrible stories to me, the Grimm brothers, who should be banned because I think they hated children. Those horrible, horrible, scary stories. Fräulein, who was scaring me with these stories, one day she was gone. And I was so happy. I didn't wash my hand for 3 days. And I was delighted. Fräulein was gone. It was the best day of my life. And I was able to run around in the street again. I was very happy. Still, things weren't right. And then my mother came to see me and she says, listen, I have something for you. I have a present for you. And she brought out this beautiful yellow star made of very shiny gold material. And she put it on my little blue coat and she sewed it on. And she says, look at this beautiful star. You're going to be wearing this star now. And we went to have some pastries. And she took me by the hand and we were walking down the street. And, you know, I was very proud of my star. Little girls love shiny things. And a man came opposite, and I sort of looked at him, sort of expecting him to say something nice about my star. He's going to like my star. And he spat in my face, and the spit was running down my face onto my star. And I was horrified. How can a man not like stars? Never occurred to me that it was me he hated. And I looked at my mother, who was always a very feisty woman, and I expected her to do something, and she said nothing. And she sort of shushed me and took me by the hand and started pulling me home. And I said, but. She says, just come home. We'll talk about it at home. Come, don't say anything. Just come. And we went back. And, you know, I was horrified because this was my mother who did not protect me. And I thought, well, if that had been my dad, this wouldn't have happened. I mean, a man spat on my star. And then things started getting worse. The Hungarians, who, by the way, were all the persecutors in our town. I've never met a German Nazi. I've only met Hungarian Nazis. They were very, very efficient, very gleeful collaborators. They took a couple of blocks in a poor part of town. They put a big, big brick fence around it, and all the Jews had to go there. And I remember looking out the window and seeing people being put on trucks and on carts. And they were sort of bullying them onto these. They had little suitcases, and you know, they were pushed and they were screamed at, and all these poor people had to go away, and it was so sudden that they had no time to take care of their pets, and there were dogs and cats running around without food. And that really upset me more than anything as a kid. You know, I felt bad for the dogs, and I would go downstairs and feed the dogs. And then the dog catcher came, and they were gone too. And then my father had to go to the ghetto. And I remember my parents standing next to each other, holding each other. He had a little suitcase, and they were sobbing, holding each other. And I sort of climbed between them, and we all cried. And I said, "Where is Daddy going?" And my mom said, "Well, he has to go away for a while, but he'll be back." And, you know, I wasn't worried because my dad always came back. Daddy wouldn't leave me. And obviously, you know, everybody went to the ghetto, and I was supposed to go, because if you even had one grandparent who was Jewish, you had to go, let alone me being half Jewish. But my mother kept me home, and she hid me under a bed. Every time anybody came to the house, I was supposed to scoot under the bed. I wasn't supposed to go near the window. I wasn't supposed to be seen or heard. I didn't exist. So my mother was very worried, but she would not let me go to the ghetto and try to hide the fact that I was there, which was illegal. During this time, a woman came to see her. She used to bring our milk. She used to come with a horse and cart with a big vat of milk, and people would go downstairs with the dishes and buy the milk there. And this woman who was delivering our milk had been an orphan, and my mother made her a wedding dress when she got married. And this simple Hungarian peasant woman, decent woman, came to see my mother and said, "I heard they're taking the Jews, and I know you have a child. Let me take your child. I will take her to my farm, and she'll be safe there. Have you still got your child here?" And my mother said yes, and she quickly put me on that cart. And I remember being so excited, going to the country, and I'll be able to play outside. And I helped on this cart and on this bench, and she even let me hold the reins for a while, and I was very happy. We were going to the country. And I remember it was on a hillside when we got there, and the house was straight across from the road. And she didn't take me to her house. She took me to the barn, which was to the left. She had a small barn with two stalls, one for the cow and one for the horse. And she said to me, "No, you're not going to the house." And I said, "But I don't want to go to the barn." She says, "No, you don't understand. You have to go to the barn. You have to hide here, because otherwise they're going to kill you." And, you know, this whole concept of kill me, I mean, killing is a very abstract thing. I mean, I'm 76 and I still have a hard time understanding death now, which I'm close to. But when you're a child, you can't understand that. And I was very upset. So she took me up on these rickety stairs to this little attic area that was full of hay. And she told me that if anybody came, I had to scooch under the eaves and not say a word, not breathe. I don't exist, because if people find me, they will kill me. And it was very hard for me to understand, and I was very upset. I was crying for my mommy and for my daddy, and it was dark. I was not yet 5 years old, and I was scared. And there were big black spiders there. And, you know, after a while, you get used to it, and you stop crying. And I cried. And then she came and brought me food. And sometimes she would smuggle me out to her kitchen and give me a bath and give me warm soup and so on. And I got used to being in the attic. I stopped crying, and I even made friends with one of the spiders. I tied a piece of cotton on a thread onto his leg, and he was my friend, but then his leg came off. Anyway, you get used to things. And I was there for 3 months, three whole months on my own as a little kid. I remember she told me, "No matter what, no noise if anybody comes." And I remember one morning very early, I looked through the cracks in the barn, in the attic, and I see these three soldiers. they were wearing green uniforms and they had black rooster feathers in their hat and they had guns with bayonets and they were slapping her around. They were slapping Elizabeth. Her name was Hergé, but Elizabeth. They were slapping her around. Where's the Jew bastard? Where's the Jew bastard? She says, there's no Jew here. Go look in my house. There's no Jew. So they went to look at the house, and of course I wasn't there. And they were on the way out when one of them had the bright idea to come and look in the barn.